So Jordan, thanks for joining us in extra time and sharing your knowledge as an entrepreneur with our entrepreneurial community. So the first question I have for you, if you look back, look at all the entrepreneurs you've dealt with and all the experience you've had personally, what is the big mistakes you see entrepreneurs making?
I think the biggest mistake, off the top of my head, without a doubt, is actually taking too big a risk, right? They haven't really understood what they're doing. They just jump blindly with this. Because this is, let me clarify this, because there is this element where you do need a bit of this reality distortion field, right? And what I mean by that is, if you look at the statistics, most businesses, any kind of businesses, die, like 75% of them die in the first 2 or 3 years, right? So if you were being completely rational, you would look at the numbers and be like, actually, I've got better odds going to the casino, putting the money on red and spinning the roulette wheel as a way of making money than starting a business. So there's this.
I have tried that, by the way, it didn't work, but anyway. Yeah. But true. That's a true point.
But there's an element of going, so if you're completely rational, you'd be like, why would I do this? Right. But as we all know, kind of entrepreneurship comes more from a passion and it comes more from the irrational self. And I think that's the mistake, right? Not that's exactly how it should start. It's then not putting a bit of a filter of like, okay, I've got this passion, I've got this like vision, I want to change the world, and that's brilliant. But how do I then like just harness it or sense check it about my next leap of what I do? So the biggest mistake I see is this sort of complete irrational, like blind faith. Like the reactional distortion field with no skepticism, with no kind of like, yeah, that's an assumption. I don't actually know that's true. I wish it were true, and it's kind of a belief that I have, but like, how do I treat my idea, my vision as a big pile of guesses that I'm going to go and try and get some real data from customers and whatever doing to figure out whether I'm right or not? Because if I'm not, I don't want to fall into the world of madness, which is keep doing the same thing again and again, expecting a different outcome. Right? It's madness. And the amount of entrepreneurs, you mentioned this earlier, Simon, who fall into this like trap of like just smashing their head against this wall with a business that's not working, expecting like some sort of nonsense of like, if I just keep persisting doing exactly what I'm doing now, somehow miraculously the business is going to turn a corner. Like, yeah, persistence, but don't look at it without, you know, common sense. There's a difference between persistent, where you're saying, okay, that hasn't worked, let's try a different route. You know, let's try a different angle and keep going at it, not giving up because you really want the vision to go, but doing this, like, so to me, it's that. It's this combination of, yeah, I have this vision, but not sense checking the risk and kind of betting it all too big on all this stuff, and then not being open to look at the data that when it's not working, to make the change and try a different avenue. And I think those things combined get the worst outcome, like the default of not de-risking it too much, blindly going it, you end up in the scenario where people like lose a ton of money, they, you know, spend years of their life, they're never gonna get back. And that's the bit, like the downside, it's kind of like the sleeping rough of entrepreneurship. I don't think that's a cost that is required, if you make sense. So it's a sense, you have to have that healthy skepticism about looking at your idea and going, it is a big, until proven by the customers and proven in the real world, it's a big pile of guesses. And my job is to go out there and try to immediately get real evidence to like de-risk it, right? To figure out what works and what doesn't and adapt accordingly and iterate.
If you were giving an entrepreneur advice about starting a business, what would it be?
Oh, so many things. Where to begin?
The key one, for example, I interviewed Patrick Lee recently. He's the co-founder of Rotten Tomatoes, which was a smash hit. And then he had 5 startups after that that weren't. And in the interview, he said that basically his biggest learning was focus. Focus, one market, one product. So is there any kind of like, there's never a silver bullet to your point.
Yeah,
there's always 100 bits of advice. But what do you, is there a couple of key ones?
I mean, the focus one I totally agree with. You know, when we're coaching mentoring startups in our accelerator program, you know, honestly, if someone said, what's the main thing you do that like helps these startups gain traction and like, you know, scale and, you know, accelerate, I'd boil it down to one phrase. It's like getting them to stop doing 80% of what they're currently doing. Right, that's it. It's like, how do we convince them to realize that being busy and a strategy of everything is not a strategy? And actually, the real trick of entrepreneurship is asking yourself, what are the few things, one or two, that I can focus on this week, this month, that's going to add the most value to my business this week, this month. And if you continually make that choice and remake that choice again and again, every week, every month, and you'd roughly get it right, you'll wake up one day with this great successful business, right? And so that filter and that focus is absolutely critical. But you can't do that unless you know there's a destination. So this back point to vision is you need to know where you want to end up and not lose sight of that. Because otherwise you'll end up in a business you didn't, like, wasn't what you wanted to get out. You were unhappy. It's not the passion. It's not what gives you energy. So you've got to be mindful of that. So yeah, focus, I agree with.
What about one area, you've been very successful in having partnerships with people. I mean, I have personally had some great partnerships, and I've also struggled in that area, but I think a lot of entrepreneurs think, should I have a co-founder or not?
Yeah, yeah.
Any tips on that front?
I'm a massive believer in co-founders, and there is a number that works and a number that definitely doesn't work.
I can tell them to us, go on, share.
No, true. So I like to have two. Two's good.
Three doesn't work?
Three is possible. Four, I don't believe works. Because then it's like, you know, decision-making via committee, even though it's a slightly different thing, how you make decisions. But then ultimately you've given up. So I also believe in, like, equality between co-founders. I don't believe that, I give you the title, but actually I don't treat you like one, right? And to me, a co-founder is like, you are absolutely critical to the long-term success of this business. Yeah. And we are equal. I believe that if you are not equal, so if we go into business 50-50, if there's three and it's a third, if we're genuinely not equal, when things are great, that's not a problem. When the shit hits the fan and things get tough, and it's like, I'm doing 80 hours, you're doing 80 hours, but you earn 60%, I earn 40%. Mm. And then the resentment kicks
in. Totally. In fact, I had this conversation with someone yesterday, who's 51%, 49%. I mean, what's the point of that one extra 2% that someone's taking?
It's ego.
But psychologically, they feel like they're working for the 51%.
Yeah, but that is just pure ego. That's come from the wrong place.
Totally.
That's about power. It's about ego. It's about vanity. Mm. It's come from all the worst places. Mm. Which to me, if someone was trying to say that as a co-founder, that's the number one flag. I'm like, we're not going to do business together because I now know just by your mindset, what you're thinking, you're coming into this with the worst, like the bad. So for me, co-founded, having another, because like you have having a sounding board that is in the boat with you, 100% in the situation, not an advisor, like in it, right? With the same responsibility to share stuff, to bounce off, to be that, and together you're stronger. Like the one thing I've noticed over the years, and I've built many different types of business models, is that the critical success factors required to build those businesses do not exist, in my opinion, within one individual, right?
Totally. Possible.
And so for me, it's about how do I find genuine co-founders that have complementary skill sets. And I think the biggest mistake often people do is when they do start, like first-time entrepreneurs, find like blonde, brunette, ginger versions of themselves as co-founders. Because like, oh, we both started in accountancy, we both started in law, and then they go and spin out a business together, typically in London. And they end up micromanaging each other. And it falls apart. They haven't actually gone, okay, what's the business we're trying to build? And therefore, what's the stuff, because you have to divide and conquer. What are you going to own that you're amazing at, that I genuinely respect your professional skill set in? And what am I going to own that you have that same mutual respect? And that together, we are 100% a partnership and stronger. And so for me, it's absolutely critical. I made most of my mistakes in the early days on the co-founder level, not understanding the importance of this, but also in the need to try and find one, because like in investors are like, oh, I can't invest in a single founder, I need co-founders. So you're like, oh, I've got to recruit one. So now you're running out trying to recruit a co-founder. How do you recruit a co-founder? I put a job ad and you applied and I interviewed you. That's madness, right? It doesn't work like that. It's like recruiting a wife, right? What?
There are programs out there that actually offer that as a service now. Yeah. But I agree with you. I mean, my own experience 20 years ago, my most successful business was a 50-50 joint venture with Helen Griffiths, who's now sitting in this room with us today doing the sound. So, you know, it's not just about the startup you did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's about a relationship after that business succeeds
completely.
Or fails.
So
that's sometimes what people overlook too, right? Well, with this extra time on YouTube, I feel like we need another extra time. I mean, I'll just close. I know you see a lot of businesses, you're in touch with the technology industry, you're doing something right in London. When I landed here, every single person in London that I spoke to that was anybody in the industry said, got to talk to Jordan. So you're doing something right.
Oh.
I mean, I'm interested in just closing off, like what you think the future's looking like. What if people are getting involved in certain sectors or certain industries, or what technologies you think are going to change the world? Of course, VR, AI, you know, which one's going to have a bigger impact? What's your vision?
This is a difficult one, right? So there are two. I think of these two different ways, right? So, maybe three different ways, right? If I'm being generous. So one of them is a comment. I had the unfortunate chance of meeting Oli Sama, one of the Sama brothers, many years ago, like the height of Rocket Internet, when they were like the gods of internet in Germany.
Wow, you're excellent. Better for German people than it is for American people.
I'm half German, so I think I can get away with this.
You can do that.
I hope so anyway. But he said to me, he's like, Jordan, you know, what's more important? An A team in a B market or a B team in an A market? And he's like, Jordan, it's really simple. The market is much more important than the team, because the A team can do nothing to change the market in which they're operating. And even a B team, a bunch of, you know, monkeys that are in this crazy rising wave of tsunami of a growing market, everybody makes money.
Right. It's just called all these people monkeys.
Yeah, I know. This guy was, I'm not saying, you know, he's a great guy.
But
long story short is the truth of the matter is markets are really important. Right. And so thinking about what macro trends within an industry, within a market, an industry market, they're connected, but you look at both of those. And so what are things that are fundamentally going to be growing, the tidal wave of the next 10 years? Because I don't want to be building a business or investing in a business that is not fundamentally in something that is forecasted to grow, gangbuster growth, not like 5-10% year on year. Like that, I want that. I'm looking for the wave. So that's one of the things I really, really look at. It's like, how do I just play in those ways? Because it makes everything else a lot easier. The second thing I think about is unsexy is often where the money is. And what I mean by that is we've seen this time and time again. Like, you know, when startups first started, it was all like direct to consumer, let's do social networks and all the raids that came out of like the valley. And then there was industries which back then, entrepreneurs would be like, oh, why would you do something in fintech? Or why would you do something in insurtech? Or like logistics, they're boring, like, ugh, right? And the interesting opportunity there is you have these sort of legacy or lagged industries where they haven't even adopted the basic tech. And I mean like just like common sense, like why are you still pushing pieces of paper around, sending faxes type thing, right?
You know, in Japan, 90% of companies still have a fax, right?
So yeah, like, but like, you know, like, but you yeah. look at these, and there are industries which are basically like that. Like a lot of like logistics is getting better, but a lot of maritime shipping, like even law, right? You know, there's a lot of industries where, for various reasons, they just like it's like Jurassic period. It's like turning up, you know, 1930, and you've got all today's modern tech, and you're like, of course I'm going to beat you. So for me, I often look at that, like where can I play? Like where's the unsexy, the uncool, right? Mm-hmm. And where can I bring just like off the shelf stuff today that's gonna give me a competitive advantage? And then the third piece, which is more to your point about what are the sort of exponential technology shifts? What are the ones where it's gonna flip and it's gonna rewrite maybe an entire industry, maybe multiple industries? And if you're not on it, right, that's gonna be a problem. So, you know, all of these things, they're not, you don't need to stack them. They're just individual ways of how I think about where do I go build businesses and what I do with them. From the technical stuff, that to me, even though I'm an engineer by training and I love to geek out, tends to be the stuff that I actually stay away from. And the reason being is there's this element where I don't want to pay for the R&D phase. I've done it in the past where I've made the mistake where I've came into the industry a little bit too early because the tech is cool and it has all this potential of what it could do, but it's not quite enterprise ready, it's not quite stable, it's not quite cheap enough, it's not quite effective enough. And now I'm trying to get a business off the ground, whether it's self-funding or raise money, and it's hard because it's not quite ready yet. And the element around it is like, that's R&D. Someone needs to pay for that, whether it's a government, whether it's a corporate, whether it's a university, someone needs to pay for it. Why should I pay for R&D? And investors don't like paying for R&D. Right? So there's an element around it where I like to look at that tipping point where I keep an eye on that stuff and I geek out on it, but I don't touch it until I feel it's ready for me to actually then run and scale with it and run with it. So for me, as much as I think, you know, like I am, as an individual, most scared about AI above like all things. I mean, climate change, but like those are the two things that like really worry me and my future, my family, but AI really worries me. But like that geekiness aside, like would I be doing an AI business right now? Like there's a difference between AI and machine learning, by the way. Some machine learning, absolutely no-braining, right? You know, can I go into process automation within corporates. Like, why are people clicking on the screen doing manual stuff when you can just get a machine learning tool, record the screenshot, and then automate that entire process? Yeah, I will invest in that and do that all day long right now because I know it works. But I don't want to try and create the new. That's going to take me 2 years and I'll probably die in that period. So that's how I personally view it.
Jordan, amazing. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with me and the listeners. I learned something today, both from the podcast earlier and this extra time slot. So thank you. And from our listeners, who are all going to be giving us lots of comments about how interesting your insights were later, I'm sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Love to pay forward.
Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate it.